Hey guys, welcome back to the JLR Equestrian Podcast with your host, Jordan Risky, and I am super excited to have a special guest here with me today. Her name is Stephanie Davis, so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to chat with you and have my listeners meet you because you're an amazing person.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So before we get into everything that you're doing currently, can you kind of take us back and tell us how you got into horses originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was the typical horse crazy little girl. And my best friend and I think we were in like first grade, went to some camp. Actually, I think we started riding Western. We were doing like barrels and poles originally. And then there was this jumping camp, and that got us hooked on eventing, and we actually stayed riding at that barn all the way through high school. So I feel like my path to horses was the typical little girl horse bug, you know, wanting to go to the Olympics, of course, all that.
Aw, so cute. And so did you event, or did you just kind of do just backyard stuff more growing up?
I think at the very beginning, it was like slow growing. But then at that particular barn, they had a really nice pony club. And so we evented and did pony club very intensely. I got up to my B before I aged out, because I'm old enough that back in the day you would age out, I think at 21. And I was in college. And I certainly didn't have a horse to do my A at the time, because they didn't have it separated for knowledge versus riding. You had to do all of it. And I did not have a horse that was so skilled at the time. So yeah, I did a lot of eventing and went through the whole pony club ranks and all that good stuff. So I thought, you know, I got a very, very good base of horsemanship early on, which was nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, pony club is a great thing, and you learn a lot in pony club for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You definitely do.
Yeah. So that kind of takes us into high school, and you went to college. You're a vet currently. Can you kind of take us into how you decided you wanted to go to college and you wanted to be a vet? Because I know a lot of young riders coming up, they kind of struggle with, oh, should I go to school? Should I just keep riding? Like, how was that decision for you?
Yeah, and that's a really tricky question, and like in making that decision, and it's so such a smart thing to ask. I was kind of honestly blindly driven to be a vet, like period. I can't really tell you why, to be honest, as far as like why. I had no, like there was nothing that was going to stop me. And you know, and I had people say, well, you can't compete and ride and also be a vet. And that's all I needed, because I'm unfortunately like, yeah, watch me kind of personality. Don't tell me I can't do something, because I'm going to do it just because.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always loved sciences and medicine. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I considered, you know, human medicine as well. But I don't know what it was. I think just my horse obsession was like, well, it makes perfect sense to be a horse vet.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was, you know, mentally locked on to that path no matter what. But that's why I was saying it's kind of not tricky, but it's smart to ask that question now as a young rider, because honestly, I never questioned it. And you should, because it's a hard path, and it's a lot of school. Yeah. It costs a lot of money. And it does eventually get in the way of riding. I mean, I still do ride, but not as much. I haven't competed as much as I have in the past.
So I
definitely wouldn't say both things can't be done.
It
can be. You just have to make the choice and the time.
Yeah, you make it work if you want to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what level did you compete up to in eventing? I forgot to ask that.
No, that's okay. I had a Percheron thoroughbred mare that actually took me intermediate.
Oh my gosh.
She was, what a great horse. She had no actual athletic purpose to be an intermediate event horse, but we just built the partnership from nothing. She was given to me when I was at fourth year in vet school. The owner, she actually was bred to be a driving horse, and The owner told me there was no way she was ever going to get that horse hitched to a cart. She's like, she'd be in the next county in like 2 seconds. She said, if you can ride her, train her, and then maybe sell her, that would be great. And I was like, cool, I don't have a horse, so let's do it.
Yeah.
So I took her, just took her. And I was in 4th year vet school and I had no time. My husband rode her a few times because I was like, ugh. I mean, originally she was really heavy and really thick and just, I was like, this thing is not going to do what I want to do. And he rode her for a while and I was like, you know, I'll take her. And so that was the end of that for him. He didn't have a horse anymore to ride. And yeah, we just worked through the levels and I rode with, well, I still do when I have the time, but I rode with Stephen Bradley at the time. And I just adore him. And we were going fine, you know, got going, got at prelim and was pretty comfortable there so that we could like try and be competitive. And I was like, do you think she can go intermediate? Because I've never had the opportunity. And he was like, oh yeah, definitely. I'm like, okay. And we ended up doing a handful of intermediate horse trials. And I think that was about enough. She got a little bit, you know, overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And we certainly never made time.
That's okay.
But
That's
yeah, I got a
okay.
few miles at intermediate.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I had a perch run thoroughbred bear. The perch
Nice.
run thoroughbreds are always super cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, she really got a great mix of both breeds. So when she was really fit, she looked like just a proper warm blood, to be honest. You know,
Yeah.
people were surprised when they're like, oh, what's her breeding? And I was like, listen, she's half perch. Her mama was a
Oh.
tank.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
awesome. Aw. So you went to college. Where did you go to college?
I went to Indiana University Bloomington for the first couple years. That's a big, very big Big Ten school. And then, so they don't have a vet school there. Purdue does in Indiana. And I was just a little nervous that I was going to be just a tiny fish in a giant ocean. So I transferred to a small school in Ohio, Otterbein. They had an equine program and they also had a very high success rate of their students getting accepted into vet school. So I just thought, well, these are trying to increase my chances basically of getting into school. So
Yeah,
then I did the
awesome.
last few years of my undergrad at Otterbein.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And then where did you go to vet school?
So I went to Ross University, which is located in on the island of St. Kitts in the Caribbean.
Oh.
Very nice.
Oh,
It
I'm so jealous.
was amazing. So it's actually not at the time, but it is now currently an accredited U.S. veterinary school. I had to take an international board exam at the time because it was still going through its accreditation. But so essentially, it's just like going to Ohio State, you know. So you go on island for 2.5 years and you go straight. You don't get summers off. You just do three semesters a year. And so you're done in 2.25 year or 2 1/3, I guess, years. And then you do the program is you come back to a state school. So I went to Virginia Tech and you spend your 4th clinical year in a state school. So I really like the idea of the program because you get 2 sets of faculty to, you know, connect with and learn from. And I just feel like there's no other opportunity like that. And living in another country is awesome. So, you know, that just the whole experience of it and living in the Caribbean, like it's worth it.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
pretty awesome. That
it's
is
very fun.
awesome.
And
So
you
were
just learn a
you?
lot of stuff about yourself and living in a different culture and time, you know, it's just
Oh,
not
yeah.
quite the same. I couldn't just drive home to see my friends or my parents. You know, you just had to start living your own
Yeah.
life.
Yeah, that's awesome. Was it kind of like on the beach? 'Cause it's
Oh
on the
yeah, so
island.
I would sit in the front row of my classroom, not because I was the go-getter, but because it had the ocean view from my window of
Oh
class.
my gosh.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's pretty
it was
awesome.
pretty amazing.
Oh my gosh.
And I could walk to the
So.
beach from my house. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I love the beach, so I would love
Same.
that.
That's awesome.
So are you originally from Indiana then?
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. So you kind of grew up there in the Indiana eventing scene?
Yes, yep. Did the
Okay.
whole Midwest thing. We went to, the Kentucky Horse Park a lot.
Yep.
The Hoosier Horse Park, I think, was more active than it is now. I think it's still trying to host some
Yeah.
horse trials, but, not as much. And we'd go up to what's the place in Chicago or near Chicago? Oh
Barrington.
my gosh. It's near there.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. If you said it, I would definitely know. But I can't think of it
Can't
right
think
now.
of it right
And went up to Michigan some too.
now. Okay, yeah. So then when
Yeah.
you came back from St. Kitts, how did you decide to go to Virginia? Like, had you always had your mind on going back to Virginia? Or was like
I
St.
mean,
Kitts kind of linked with that school?
yeah, it's not. So basically with the program at Ross, like all when you're leaving to go to your fourth year, they send students to all the schools, all the state schools. So I mean,
Oh.
I could have ended up in,
Okay.
Missouri, which I didn't want to.
No.
Basically, so essentially, I think they do the program a little different now, but when I was there, you picked your top three schools that you wanted to go to, and based on a little bit your academic ranking, you might get first choice or second choice. I actually originally wanted to go to NC State, over Virginia Tech. I think for whatever reason in my mind, I don't know if it was true, but I thought they had a better sport horse program. But just randomly at that time, they were not taking any Ross students on that rotation because I think they
Oh.
had their class was full. There's like an
Okay.
agreement between the schools. And so Virginia Tech was my second choice. So
There
that's
you
where I
go.
ended up. Yeah, because I mean,
Yeah.
Virginia is kind of Mecca for eventing. The O'Connors at
Yeah.
the time, that was, oh my gosh, the plains. Everybody's in the plains.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so
Yeah.
I was just like, yes, Virginia, that's where I want to go.
Yeah, and then you just kind of stayed over there after you graduated and everything.
Yeah, I finished because I went to Virginia Tech is in Blacksburg, so it's 4 hours south of where I live now.
Okay.
And so I did my year there, and then when I, was then a DVM, I needed a job, and I wanted to do an internship in sports medicine, and I went to Rudd and Riddle, and as a student, as an extern, and then I also visited Virginia Equine Imaging as a student, purposefully targeting both of those places, seeing if I would like them, if they would like me. I was actually. I was offered the job at Rudd and Riddle first. I really wanted to be in Virginia, but Rudd and Riddle is an im very impressive hospital. You don't really say no to it. So I actually took the job at Rudd and Riddle because Kent Allen at VEI had not decided. They just hadn't chosen an intern yet. And so I was like, well, I'm not banking on them wanting to have me because what if I don't, say no to Rudd and Riddle? That'd be really stupid. So I took the job, but then later Dr. Allen offered me the job. And so I said, well, yeah, I really want to be in Virginia because I prefer event horses over the race horses. Just that's literally it. I said, but I already took the job at Rudd and Riddle. And he was like, let me see what I can do about that. And I was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? I'm this nobody baby vet out of school, and I'm just got myself in a pickle, I felt like. And so he calls me back, and he was like, he's like, Dr. was it? Yes, it was Dr. Rude that called me, actually. Dr. Allen didn't. Dr. Rude calls me and says, so I hear you want to go to VEI. And I was like, I mean, I guess so. I was just like, first of all, I've never even talked to the man. He's the owner of like one of the most prestigious veterinary practices in our country. And I was just like, oh my God, freaking out that I was just on the phone with him, let alone that I'm saying I want to work somewhere else, Oh my gosh, it was so awkward. And he just was so funny. And actually, if this gets out to Kent Allen, I will die. But what Dr. Rude told me, and I will literally never forget it because I know he meant it as a joke, but he said, "Well, we'll let you out of your contract. Don't worry about it. It's all good." He's like, "But if you want to learn something, just give us a call and come back." And I was like, "Oh my God." I just wanted to get off the phone. I was so embarrassed and was like, "What's happening?" So long story, sorry, short, I ended up at
Oh.
Virginia Equine Imaging for my first couple years now in practice.
Oh
So
my
quite a
gosh.
start of vet
Oh.
school,
Oh.
vet practice.
Yeah, I'd be freaking out if that were me.
Oh
Yeah.
my gosh. Yeah, I was terrified. I mean, honestly, I didn't. I mean, I thought truthfully, I was like, well, I guess if I don't get either of those jobs, I'll just start calling practices and see if they want to hire me, because I just had to pay my bills. So, but I was, extremely lucky that they were both interested, and then I had to choose, which was really unfortunate.
So you worked in Virginia then, and then did you start your practice after that? Did you meet your husband then? How did that
Yeah, we
occur?
met actually in vet school. So we had been dating, through our last year. And actually, I was 8 months ahead of him in school. So I actually came back to the States while he was still on island. And then we just kind of did the long distance for about 8 months. And then he got into Virginia Tech for his 4th year. So we kind of were able to stay close.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I did 2.5 years at VEI, and then we weren't really ready to open our own practice. Honestly, we didn't even know we were going to stay here because it's hard for two equine vets to have jobs. It's, some people don't necessarily want to hire a husband and wife team because that can be tricky, maybe too many emotions, I don't know. So there was another practice that my husband was working at when I finished at VEI. And so I started there. It's also local, Clark Equine, and we worked there for a few years before we opened our own practice.
That's awesome. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about the practices that you guys have today and kind of what you guys specialize in and what your businesses look like?
Yeah, sure. So we opened our practice, what year is it? 2013. So it's 10 years old. We've been an ambulatory sports medicine practice for that time. So, obviously for our clients, if they have emergencies, colic, choke, laceration, whatever's going on and they need help, we'll come. But obviously my training at Virginia Equine Imaging is mostly with lameness and sports medicine. So, that's kind of our niche. But truthfully, as an ambulatory practice, you have to kind of offer all the services that people need. And we're happy to do that. And so in the last, let's see, it's been a year and a half ago, I opened up our rehab center. I've just over the years, I've honestly always wanted to do rehab. I feel like it's something that the veterinary industry needs to take back some ownership of. And honestly, I was just getting frustrated just injecting and shockwaving and injecting and shockwaving, and then I just walk away. It's not like I can't call the client or say, how's it going? What's going on? But you just don't really know what the horse is doing day to day. And you can advise them, of course, and there's plenty of excellent horse people who can manage rehabbing a horse. But in the same breath, sometimes it doesn't work in that program. Like, so for example, a busy training facility where other horses are getting ridden every day and turned out, it's busy and too stimulating for the horse that needs to be rehab, that needs the 15-minute hand walk or all those kinds of things. They don't handle it really well. I've gotten a few horses at the rehab, more so not that they couldn't do the work, but that the horse needed the environment that it could be quiet and, carefully do the rehabilitation.
Especially like when they're all so high paced, like it's hard, like sometimes they don't want to focus on rehabbing the horse because they want to focus on all the performance
Yeah, of
horses in
course. I
there.
mean, and a trainer, I mean, they don't pay their bills on rehab horses. They pay bills on horses in training and going to shows and selling and teaching lessons. So honestly, I think One thing that my facility also offers is that, they can fill that stall with another horse that's ready to go at the time being, and we'll work on getting it fixed and ready to kind of get back to work so that it's actually financially a little bit better for, and even sometimes for the client, definitely for the trainer, but for the client too, you're paying a pretty hefty board and you can't ride it. Might as well send it to a rehab that, gets lasered every day, gets on the vibration stall, gets on the aqua treadmill, has the hand walking, has, people palpating its legs every day, all that kind of stuff. It just seems more bang for your buck, for what you
Yeah, of
need at the time.
course. Yeah, agreed. So, what is the name of that of both of your businesses, and where are they located at?
Oh, sure. So Davis Equine is our ambulatory practice. It's based out of our home essentially, because we're just the two trucks, and that's in the Plains, Virginia. Like I mentioned before, the Plains, very posh. And then the rehab, it's Virginia Equine Rehabilitation and Performance Center, which is far too long, but I didn't know how to relay what I wanted to say any other way. So we call it VRC for short, and it's in Warrenton, Virginia, which sounds farther, but it's honestly a 10-minute drive from my house, so it's really nice.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. So, along with your equine businesses and the vet clinics, you also have another company that used to be called Ride Safe. Now it's called Be Safe. And that's kind of how we got into contact. So, do you want to kind of tell us what the company is about and what your goal is, hopefully, with this company for people?
So I'll try not make this story too long either. But it's been, gosh, more than 10 years, Ride Safe slash Be Safe now. And I'll explain why we switched it. So originally I called it Ride Safe. My husband used to do competitive cycling pretty seriously when he was younger. And so every year we had to watch the Tour de France. And I was like, this is boring. I don't get it. And so we're watching the tour. So every year I started to learn a little bit more. I started to get the idea of the strategies. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can actually relate some of my sport to your sport. And it got more interesting. So I would actually watch it versus just, do something else. And they had these commercials for this medical ID bracelet called Road ID. And I was like, that's awesome. Why aren't we wearing those in eventing? Because the armbands are stupid. I mean, they're antiquated. It's a piece of paper. Half the time, people weren't even wearing their own bracelet, which is obviously dangerous. And you don't, people are only wearing them at the horse show. And the only, that's not the only time you fall off or get hurt or get
Yeah,
kicked or
exactly.
whatever, so it's just not very practical as far as like actual, injuries with horses. So to be quite honest, I had no idea how to start a business. So I emailed and called Road ID several times, thinking I just wanted to pass on this group of people that I'm a part of and saying, hey man, like you should, cater to the horse industry as well. And I mean, they just basically didn't get back to me. I'm sure they were very busy. And who's this random girl trying to email me, whatever. So I was like, fine, I'm gonna do it myself. So I figured out where to order the products and how to put the business together and build a website, which I'd never done and was a nightmare. Because at the time, like, I was just like, what am I doing? I have no idea. And it was very slow, but I actually, where it really started to take off is I had a meeting with the CEO of the USEA at the time, and actually now Rob Burke, who's in charge now, is a good friend of mine. We went to undergrad together, so that worked out. But we had a, I went to their office and I had a meeting and pitched the idea of like, look, this is another option. I think we should change the rule where you wear an armband or a bracelet. I was like, I'm not trying to negate the armband. If somebody wants to pay $5, it's obviously far cheaper. Like, I'm totally on board. I just see a vision of where the bracelets can be worn all the time as well as at the horse show. You can gain information faster, easier. You can do it digitally, all web-based. Great. Just trying to come up into the next level of technology. And they were on board. And so they did a rule change. And I mean, like the next day, I had 200 orders and I was very overwhelmed.
Oh
I
man.
was in panic mode. I'm pretty sure I was in Aiken at the time, practicing and riding my horse, and was just like, oh my gosh, I have like 200 orders to fulfill, like right now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I've learned a lot on the fly, to be honest. But it, I just started to learn and started to streamline how it worked. I mean, we're still actually, still, it's really quite small, but that's kind of what we're working on right now. And that was kind of the transition for Be Safe Bracelets, is that there's so many people who could benefit from a medical ID, not just people with horses. And I've had a lot of horse people say, oh, well, my mom could really benefit for this, but she doesn't really ride. So, I just found that, you need to make a bracelet that people identify with. So for myself, right, like with the Survive Safe for breast cancer, I mean, that's actually honestly the one that I wear, because I've been through it and I, identify with that, and it's meaningful to me. Because that's what I'm finding. I want to kind of diversify where it means. If it doesn't mean something to you, if you don't have something on it that you're like proud to wear it as almost like what you wear every day, your jewelry, or something that you really genuinely like, I have a medical issue and I want somebody to know about it if something happens, you're not going to wear it. Like, you might think it's cool at first. You'll buy it, you'll wear it for like a month, and it'll just go back in the jewelry box or wherever, or get trashed. So for me, it's really important to make it something that people identify with. So if I can diversify with, be safe, ride safe, survive safe, ski safe, swim safe, whatever you do, we're gonna do it safe, and so that's kind of the direction that we're headed with it.
I will say I got it when I was going down to be a working student the first time I left home, because I was like, I'm not gonna be home, my family's not around, and I'm like, what if something happens? Like, nobody's gonna know like how to contact anybody. So then I got it for that.
Exactly.
And I just wore it all the time because I was like, you never know when something might happen. And then, like, when I was going through all my cancer stuff, I wore it all the time because I was like, I want to be safe and I don't know, like, something might happen when I'm in public and nobody's around. So it just gives you that peace of mind. And you guys offer like little gemstones on it, so then it looks even cuter. So then I'm like, I have to get that part.
You have to do the sparkles, because that's the thing. Like I said, if you love it and it feels like your jewelry, you're gonna wear it. So like, I do try really hard. Like, I can't tell you how many times people have been like, well, do you have this color crystal? And I was like, I don't, but I'll buy it for you and we'll do it. Like, I've done so many custom colors. I've done like custom patterns. Like, it's hilarious. Like, I had one, some little girls that got like so into it at one point, and they were like, can you do alternating pink and blue crystals, like every other sparkle? And I just thought, oh my gosh, what'd I get myself into? Because I put these on by hand, like they're handmade, the sparkles,
Oh my gosh, I love
which I
that.
don't have time for, but I find a way.
Oh
One
my
day
gosh.
I will stop being a control freak and I will teach someone how I do it, but I want it to look very nice and professional. I'm not, it's same thing. If it's just the quality has to be there, or people aren't going to wear it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so that's super exciting. This brand is very, very exciting. And this company is super cool. So
Thank you.
you spoke a little bit about going through cancer. Can you kind of talk or tell our listeners like maybe some advice about life in general that like maybe you learned going through your fight with cancer? Because I know that it's a big battle and you learn a lot about yourself when you go through something like that for sure.
You are not kidding, and you definitely have the perspective as well. Gosh, there's just so much about it. The one of the biggest things that I told people, even during it, is like, you don't I think it made me so much more empathetic. You just don't know what people are going through because someone with cancer looks totally normal. Well, not everybody, but I looked totally normal. I was completely healthy. I behaved normal. I was riding my horses. I was working. Like, I was doing all the things. Like, what do you mean I have cancer? You know what I mean? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So I remember thinking when I was driving every morning to my radiation therapy, I was like, people honking their horns or getting all mad in traffic. And you're just like, like maybe they're going to their cancer therapy too. And you know what? That sucks. Like, so maybe give them a little bit of slack. I think that was one really big take home because I for sure used to get more uptight about stuff and I need it exactly like this, or I'm a little OCD about things. And I mean, that part probably really hasn't changed, but I think I just can understand that you just never know what's going on with people and you can't always see it from the outside, you know? And then just perspective in general on
Oh,
life, like
yeah.
what's really important. Like, oh boy, maybe I had a crummy day for whatever reason, but I'm not going to radiation therapy today, so that's great.
I'm not sick. I'm doing good. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
it's crazy for people having to, then you just think about people who are having medical struggles all the
oh,
time.
yeah.
Like, 'cause then it does become your life. I mean, I don't even know how, but I kept working. I had surgery and whatever, and a few days later, maybe within a week, I went back to work and I worked every day of the radiation. I just got my treatment in the morning and then went to see horses.
That's amazing. That's
Just keep going.
amazing. Very inspiring, that's for sure. So, as we wrap it up, do you have any advice for any young rider in the horse world when they want to go follow their dreams and they're not sure what's next for them? What kind of advice would you give to them? Whether it's for school, their riding, or something in life.
Yeah, I think, oh gosh, there's so many things. But I think one of the biggest things that I have had along the way, but I think it's, I don't know, more prominent in my mind now is to find a mentor. Find somebody that's either doing what you want to do or something you think you want to do and literally go experience it. And someone who will just be brutally honest with you about this is what the job is like. Go be with a professional that five-star rider. Like, it's not as awesome as it seems. It's a lot of hard work and it never ends. It never ends. And the horses will break your heart 5 million times over. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm ready for a five-star. And then they're gonna go lame 2 weeks before. I can't tell you as a veterinarian how many times I've seen it. A lot of work and time, physical, mental, all of it. So as much as making riding a career is enticing to all of us, guarantee, I mean, I was right there with you. I just think you just have to prepare yourself for that. And not in a bad way. I think it's just when you know what it is like for real, then you can decide if that's going to be good for you or not. Because I think, to be quite honest, I think my biggest mistake when I was younger is even with veterinary medicine, I just dreamed about it. I dreamed about it being a certain way, right? And then when reality hit, I was like, oh, this is a bit different than I had expected. And you adjust to those things, and that's fine. But I think, younger me would love to have talked to older me and maybe might have made different decisions, to be honest. So I think for the young riders wanting to be professionals or vets or maybe some other completely different career where they can still maintain their riding goals, there's a million different ways to do it. And I think when I was younger, I just didn't see, like I said, I was way too laser focused. Like, I didn't see the other options because there's tons of them. There's tons of them. So I think that's really for younger people now. Like, that's the smart way. Talk to people that are doing what you want to do. Get the whole story about what that lifestyle is like. And
Yeah,
from
of
multiple
course.
people too, because my lifestyle is very different from other sports medicine vets. Like this is a very unique industry, and I think the same goes actually for upper level event riders.
Oh yeah.
Some of them, yeah, are,
They're
struggling,
all so different.
and some are like really in a good place, financially or with their facilities and their owners. But I think some of that's a little bit of luck, some of that's a little bit of financial backing from when they were younger. It just really depends. There's a lot of variables. So I just think, just getting to know what it's really like is really going to help you decide where you want to go and what you want to be.
Yeah, of course. That's really great advice. I really appreciate that. I think my
Sure.
listeners are really gonna love that advice
Oh,
there.
that's
Thank you.
awesome. Yeah, of
Yeah.
course.
So before you leave us, is there any supporters or people that you want to thank before we wrap this up?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I've had a lot of help along the way, getting to where I am. And I think, and that's really important too. Just never forgetting where you came from, and we're all just regular people. Even the people that you really admire, we're all just normal people and have our own strengths and weaknesses. And there's nothing to it. You just basically. Other people have more experience in certain skills or jobs than you have. And so you just have to go out and learn them and gain the skills yourself and gain the experience yourself.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast tonight, and I really appreciate all the advice and everything that you shared with us today, and I really hope my listeners go and check out all your lovely businesses that you have to offer. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was such a good conversation. Thank you.